Chapter 10. And you thought talking dinosaurs was weird. New email from Chip Collins to Julie Taylor. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, and you thought talking dinosaurs was weird. Hi, Julie. Damn it, Barb's gone. Barb is the key. Oh, wait, there she is, way off in the distance down this dirt road we're on. Hey, is that your great-aunt Barb being kidnapped by some dude in armor on the back of a unicorn? I never thought I'd hear you say that, but yes. Well, it's a good thing it's not real. I look around at the low stone buildings, the old wooden pull carts, the smell. Obviously not 2020, or even 1945. It's just a temporal anomaly. It seems pretty fucking real to me. Pete pulls his foot out of a big pile of unicorn shit. Right, I guess real or not, we're gonna have to save her. I instinctively check my phone to see if there's an Uber around. Nope. Not here in whatever the fuck year we're in. Gotta catch up to them. Where the hell are we going to get a couple of unicorns? We need bait. We're not fishing, dude. Yeah, we're fishing for unicorns. I think it's virgins. Something about unicorns and virgins. Don't look at me. I start turning around screaming in all directions. Come here, virgins, or unicorns. Actually, unicorns is what we really need, but we'll take a virgin if it'll get us a unicorn. Stop. Please. And by the way, why do you think they'd call them unicorns in this dimension? They'd probably just call them horn horses. That's all they are. Horses with horns. Horn horses. Wow, you've got a lot to learn, dude. Not anywhere in any dimension in all of infinity would they call that majestic creature a horn horse. That's blasphemy. They're called unicorns. Beautiful word for a beautiful, magical animal. Whatever, you can shut up now. Let's just ask this lady. And sure enough, there's a woman trotting down the road on, you guessed it, a unicorn. Excuse me, ma'am. We need help. She looks down from her mount suspiciously. Qui diable êtes-vous? Oh, fuck. French, of course. But Pete's on the case. Oh, hey, my phone. I've got that Google Translate thing. I don't think I need internet for it. Let me try. He pulls it out and types, we need your help. And it actually speaks it in French. The woman is gobsmacked. That's four times now if you're keeping track. Gaping at Pete's magic rectangle. She's just this side of calling the local high priest to have us drawn and quartered in the square for witchcraft. But her curiosity gets the better of her. D'où êtes-vous? Man, this app rocks. It translates her spoken words to English. Pete reads his screen. She wants to know where we're from. I clear my throat. Greetings. We're from Paris, on Earth. She throws her head back and cackles.
Tout le monde est de terre, imbécile. It's no summer à Paris, putain de merde.
Pete, what? What did she say? She said, everyone's from Earth, you idiots, and we're in Paris, dumb fuck. She's pointing in the direction the armor dude absconded, another favorite word, by the way, with Barb, and yep, there it is, way off in the distance, three quarters completed. Notre Dame Cathedral. Okay, confirmed. We're in medieval France. Yeah, now you can ask me for a shilling. I walk over to the woman. She's calming down a bit, enjoying us two court jesters. She's so relaxed, she's taken out a needle and thread and is darning her pantaloons. Distracted much? Ahem, excuse me, ma'am. Wouldn't want to interrupt your nifty needlework there, but might we borrow your unicorn?
Qu'est-ce qu'un unicorn?
She's asking, what's a unicorn? I point to her unicorn. She cackles again.
C'est? C'est mon cheval de con.
Pete's cackling now. He doesn't even have to say it. He just walks over and shows me the phone screen, and it says, this? It's my horn horse. So we talk the lady into letting us borrow her horn horse, by giving her one of my enchanted squares. Yeah, it's just my Starbucks reward card, but we told her it made delicious hot beverages appear out of nowhere. Which is actually true, if you buy 10 coffees first, and I think I'm due, so all she has to do is find the nearest medieval Starbucks, and she's golden. Now we're trotting towards Notre Dame on her horn horse. And let me tell you, I've only ridden a horse once or twice in my life, but I don't remember it sucking so bad. Like, I don't know, you'd expect riding a unicorn, fuck it, you know, I'm not correcting myself anymore. It's a goddamn unicorn. Anyway, you'd expect it to be magical, like riding on a pillow of rainbows or some shit. Wrong. It's like riding on a... Wait, you know what? I think this deserves a list. 10 things that are less painful than riding a unicorn. 1. Root canal. And not just your average agonizing, cringy, want-to-die root canal. I'm talking the kind of root canal where the sadistic oral surgeon laughs, maybe even cackles, and says, "I hope you have someone to drive you home after we're done." Yeah, that kind. Number two, that ride at Universal. You know the one I'm talking about. Remember we took Gigi there? There are only two things I remember from that whole day. Yay, a sublist. Two things I remember from Universal Studios Orlando. One, no one should ever bring a one-year-old to Universal. Like, it's common sense, but more people than you'd expect to do it, including us, and so you're plodding around with a wailing, noxious baby in 100-degree swamp heat, a child who will never, ever remember even a single second of this. And you're looking around at all the other parents who brought one-year-olds, and you all nod at each other in the common understanding that, yes, we're all fucking masochists. Never again. Until next year. Two, the Minions ride. Oh my God, who designed this thing? The Marquis de Sade? They strap you in and start shaking the whole damn place, compressing and pulling apart your poor spine until tears, not of joy, are pouring down your face, and you're begging them to stop. And all those years growing up where you wish the rides would last forever go out the window, and all you can think is, either kill me or stop this torture machine now. Either one's good. Really, death is preferable to this. Anyway, back to the main list of 10 things that are less painful than riding a unicorn. 3. A paper cut. 4. Pouring hydrogen peroxide on your paper cut so it doesn't get infected. 5. Having the hydrogen peroxide thing not work and your finger gets so infected they have to amputate it, without anesthesia. 6. Leaving the hospital and slamming the car door on your new finger stump. 7. Getting a second infection in that finger. Jeez, that finger's bad luck. So they just pull the whole damn thing off with pliers. Again, no anesthesia. Numbers 8, 9, and 10, more horrible finger carnage, eventually resulting in death. Okay, so I feel like you're getting the picture. Riding a unicorn is not my favorite thing. So, Pete, you enjoying this as much as I am? Dude, I think my ass just fell off. In my pants. Hey, I've got an idea to distract us. There's a definite obvious medieval vibe going on, and the appropriate stench. So we should give ourselves medieval names. Why am I not surprised? Because you're smart. Okay, I'm the Earl of Awesomeness. Earl Awesome, for short. I was going to say Duke of Dork, but sure. I'll be Sir Pete-a-lot. Nah, sounds too much like Pete-a-lot, like you pee a lot. How about just Sir Peter? Whatever floats your moat. He grins. Like what I did there? Floats your moat? Crap, you're rubbing off on me. I'm telling groaners. This horn horse must be scrambling my brain. It's a unicorn, but excellent. Yes, an excellent groaner, my fine compatriot. I mean, Sir Peter. If I had a sword, I'd knight you. If I had a sword, I'd beat you over the head with the flat part for getting me into more of your stupid shit. Hey, I didn't even want to come in here. She's your great aunt. He turns a little and bows before Earl Awesome. Touché. A little silence. Then, Chip, you think she's okay, Barb? I have a two-part answer to that. Christ, forget I asked. Now listen, I think on the surface she's scared shitless, but under that, I think she finally got to be the damsel in distress she always wanted. Like in one of her books. Huh, I think you're right. You think I'm right and? He rolls his eyes. Well, he's in front of me, so I'm just imagining that he's rolling his eyes. I think you're right, Earl Awesome. That's better. A half hour later, here's the scene. We ride into that big square in front of the unfinished Notre Dame Cathedral, and it reminds me instantly of what it looked like on TV after it burned last year in 2019. I remember the reporters talking about how it had survived so many potential disasters from its original construction in around 1200, over 800 years ago. I spy some dudes up there building the rafters, and I feel bad for them, knowing that a single spark is going to undo all their decades of work in a couple of hours. Bummer. But hey, who knows? Maybe in this dimension, the cathedral lasts forever. That's what's good about infinite dimensions. Literally, anything's possible. So I wave and give the thumbs up to the one guy looking down at me. And he's, I can't quite make it out. Wait, he just mooned me. Anyway, there's a crowd ringing the square, some on unicorn back, one as filthy as the next, except for the upper-class folk, one more flamboyantly dressed and powdered and perfumed than the next. And there's a wedding going on right in front of the giant doors. Aw, look. If Barb's here, at least she gets to see a wedding. So romantic. No, dude. Look. Oh, my God. Barb is in a white dress with a veil and a Princess Diana-length train, flanked by guards in frilly outfits. Don't let the look fool you. These guys are brandishing some pretty badass swords. It's weird, though. I can't tell if she's weeping out of fear or something else. She's staring into the eyes of some good-looking prince type, like 6'7" with long, flowing black hair and a rugged beard. Shit, this guy's straight out of one of her romance novels. She looks numb or in a trance. Poor Barb. Pete fumbles with his phone, madly translating, and shouts, "Aretes!" The crowd turns and the priest stops mid-sentence and glares. The guards get into their ready-to-slay-the-strange-looking-intruder stance and scooch a little closer to Barb. We dismount, or Pete dismounts, and I fall off the unicorn with about as much grace as you'd expect, barely missing a pile of shit, and the locals have to help me up, and my very first step is into said pile of shit. Anyway, Pete marches right up to the altar, and the crowd parts for him, and Barb finally looks up and snaps back to reality.
"Pete! Oh, Pete! You're here!"
"I'm here to save you, Barb." I cough. "We're here to save you, Barb." She looks confused. Man, they must have drugged her or something. And the dude standing behind the dais in a red and blue cape advances on us, pissed.
"What Englishman dares interrupt the administration of this most holy and prophesied union?"
Pete exhales. He was getting all ready to fight these frilly clowns to the death and translate French on his phone at the same time. Now he'll just have to fight these frilly clowns to the death.
"I am Sir Peter. This is my fellow, knight..." He rolls his eyes for real this time, so I can see them. "Earl Awesome. We hail from the Kingdom of New York."
"New York?"
"Trust me. Now hand over that woman. She belongs to me."
The crowd oohs and ahs. Apparently a few of them understand English, too. And they're murmuring in French to their buddies. Just like a crowd in Manhattan, always up for a scene. The more drama, the better. Some hunky stranger in even stranger garb from a strange land called New York has just ridden into town looking to rescue his maiden. And somebody's probably gonna die. Cool. Grab the popcorn. Snapping his fingers, the cape dude summons more guards and pokes Pete in the chest.
"Thy kingdom means nothing here. If it be true thou lies to fight for her, thou shalt die." "Then I shall die."
More ooze from the crowd. This Sir Pete guy means business. Cape dude sizes him up. He points back to Barb, shaking his finger, angry.
"Thou hast claim to this woman. She is thy wife?"
This gets a big sigh from everyone. Aw, oh, romance. Yeah, this is the shit. This Sir Pete guy must really be in love with Barb.
"She's not my wife. She's my great aunt."
Now the crowd collectively groans. Ew. Pete whirls around.
"Hey, it's not like that. We ran into her at a hotel. It was a total coincidence, and she just happens to be..."
I tap Pete's shoulder. "I can't believe I'm saying this, dude, but I don't think they need the 10-minute chip version."
"Right." He turns back to the dude. "Hand her over. Now."
A sniff.
"Do not thou knowest who I am?"
"No, I don't knowest. It doesn't matter. Hand her over."
"I am the royal provost, governing Paris for the king. As such, I hast the authority to administrate the prophecy."
"Prophecy?"
"Ahem."
The provost dude reaches back and one of his lackey boys hands up a giant scroll. And Julie, I think this guy plans on reading the whole thing. It's like a jumbo roll of paper towels you'd get at Costco. I'm like, tear off a single sheet, read the Cliff Notes version, and let's be done with it. Oh shit, yep, he's reading the whole thing.
"The great prophecy and decree of the most noble and holy saint..." I didn't quite catch the name.
"As recited by the stuffy, droning royal provost, interpreted and embellished by the Earl of Awesomeness." The royal provost starts off with a lot of forthwiths and heretofores and thines and hasts. In the interests of time, we have a great aunt, two kids, and a multiverse to save. I've taken all that shit out. Here goes. "Once upon a time, in ancient France, the old wife of a farmer was gored by a rabid unicorn while slopping her pigs. As she spurted blood and slowly gave up her life, she saw visions. Not visions of pigs hovering over her, sniffing and oinking, although that was happening too. No, visions of the distant past and the far-flung future. And she dictated them to her daughter.
And she saith,
With mine own eyes I see a black monolith, square in each dimension but tall in height, and it emits a harsh sound, and with its otherworldly voice it shouteth, Open the pod bay doors, Hal. And the colors, oh, the colors.
I interrupt the provost. Whoa, hold on. Saint What's-Her-Face looked into the future and saw 2001 A Space Odyssey? Dude, that's a movie.
A movie?
Like a made-up story. Fiction. It didn't happen.
Silence, blasphemer!
Whatever. So he continues, and the very next vision out of Saint What's-Her-Face's mouth is this.
And low and trembling I watch as the sky turns and turns into a terrible vortex, and the sharks of the sea are swept up into it, and...
No, stop, dude. That's Sharknado.
Stop interrupting me.
It's a movie, Provost. How the hell are we supposed to believe anything she says? It's fiction, dude. Did she see snakes on a plane, too? He whips around from the scroll.
Amazing. Has thou studied this prophecy? For there is such a verse. Look hither. Chapter 312, verse 9.
He rapidly unwinds more of the scroll.
And the flying machine is filled with serpents. But thine heel holds force and tears a hole in the...
Yeah, a hole in the side of the plane and all the snakes get sucked out. Great. Your saint prophecy lady is like Nostradamus, but with movies. Congratulations. Now, can we get Barb back?
Silence! Gods!
So, Provost Dude has them tie a gag around my mouth, and Pete's like, Wow, I can't believe I never thought of doing that. And then they gag him, too, so we just make pissed off faces at each other instead.
As I was saying.
And he goes on like this. I swear to God, it reads like ye old French/English movie reviews from the future. All it's missing is star ratings. Or, I don't know, maybe it's negative ratings, like Sharknado got 5 piles of unicorn shit. Anyway, he finally gets to the relevant part, and everyone gets real quiet.
And on a cloudless day in spring, I see a woman appear from the farthest reaches of the cosmos, adorned with a jangly bracelet and strange clothing. She enters the cathedral and is smitten with the prince, and he with her. For the powers of the universe have ordained that these souls be united. Let no man tear the cloth of the union in twain.
What?
The provost motions for them to take off our gags.
I could have you hanged for repeatedly interrupting me. What?
I said bullshit.
Excuse me?
Your prophecy, it's bullshit. It doesn't even mention us.
Ahem. I was getting to that part. And there will be an ass in the form of a man.
And the crowd howls in laughter.
Hey! A jester that will bring mirth and good cheer to all the people.
Oh, okay, that's a little better. I'll take it. So what happens to this jester?
He dies.
Yikes. Yes, yikes. What about Pete?
There's only the mention of a great battle over us, for the fate of the universe hangs in the balance.
You're damn right the fate of the universe hangs in the balance. We need her for the murd.
Murd? You know that is French for shit, right?
It's the multiverse entropy restabilizing DNA energizer. He looks at me blankly. Whatever, let's just get to it so we can be on our way and save the multiverse.
What is a multiverse?
How much time do you have? He waves me off and the scrolls fall into the hands of the lackey. I guess that means he's done. And the provost claps his hands and shouts to the crowd.
To fulfill the prophecy, Sir Pete shall battle Prince Jean for the maiden's heart in romantic love.
Pete shakes his head. She's my great aunt. The crowd ews again. This time it's pretty funny.
Right, for the maiden's claim.
Barb runs from the altar as multiple guards hold her back.
Oh dear, no, Pete. No, don't do this.
But the prince has already shed his armor, standing before Pete. Naked? Okay, this just got extra weird. The provost is keen by now that we have no idea what the fuck is going on, so he explains.
Civilized men do not bludgeon each other with swords and weapons. They grapple.
The crowd goes wild at the word and backs up, revealing a white ring on the ground. I'm guessing the size of a wrestling ring in ancient Greece. Shit, who knows? I should finally stop being surprised by the differences in these dimensions or temporal anomalies or whatever they are. I mean, obviously some random professional grappler guy was going home to Greece 1,000 years ago. but got lost on his way and settled in ancient France, starting that country's professional grappling obsession. We're talking about infinite possibilities, right? So this guy reaches out his hand and does the little Matrix move, you know, the one where he invites Pete to come and get him with the wave of his fingers. Julie, he's built like the steel cables holding up the Verrazano Bridge. I'm not kidding. His muscles have little muscles, like that pizza from Vito's out in Williamsburg, where you can choose pizza as a topping for your pizza, and your pizza comes out with little baby pizza slices on top. Yeah, his muscles are like that. I swear to God, Julie, and I'm sorry to say this, but it's true. If this was happening to me, and I had to strip down to my naked, out-of-shape butt in front of a bunch of medieval Parisians and fight this incredible Hulk of a man, I'd just walk away saying, fuck it, you win, it's not even worth the whole multiverse. But Pete is obviously not me, thank God. He's obviously thinking about the fate of the multiverse and his great aunt and our little bumpkins left behind with Tesla at a lab in 1945 Paris. And he strips down slowly, eliciting quite the breathless reaction from the ladies, I might add. He grumbles, rules. The provost shouts a confident grin on his face, raising three fingers.
Three times out of the ring and you lose. And no blood.
What about pinning him on his back?
Who are we, the Greeks?
The crowd guffaws at this, like those wimpy Greeks obviously couldn't handle real medieval Parisian wrestling. Whatever. I whisper to Pete. I guess I'm like Mickey the Trainer from the Rocky movies now. Shit. I was gonna say pull his eyeballs out, but there'd be blood. Okay, dirty tactic number two. Go straight for his balls. Kick his balls. The provost must hear me because he shouts,
"And no kickings of the balls!"
Damn. Okay, Pete, you're gonna have to win this one fair and square. Sorry, dude. He leans toward me and, nearly silent, says, "I'm not winning. There's no way. I'm just going to create enough of a riot here, and in the confusion, you grab Barb and get out of here." Holy fuck. Just like that, Pete is willing to sacrifice himself and stay trapped in this godforsaken dimension-slash-temporal anomaly for everyone else. Gigi and Hannah, Julie and Meg, Tesla, the multiverse. I'm overcome. "Dude, I know you're naked, but..." He smiles. "Is it hug time?" "Yeah, I guess." So we hug, the most awkward two guys hugging while one is naked hug, and I think we mentally agree never to do that again, and I promise to come back for him at some point, but we both know that's bullshit. There's no coming back to wherever we are, but I promise him anyway. "Tell Hannah I love her, and Meg." One of those very rare Pete tears makes its way down his cheek. God, he's getting all mushy, and suddenly something in my brain snaps. "Wait, no, I'm not leaving this fucking place without you." "We're talking about the multiverse, dude. The multiverse." "Yeah, and we need both of you, you idiot." Wow, I just called Pete an idiot. And he deserved it for overlooking the central crux of our plan. That we need Barb and Pete to co-proximity something or other. He laughs. "Another first. Now we're both idiots. So how the hell do we get out of this one?" Our laughs turn to tears as we both realize how fucked we are right now, and how is it possible that the fate of everything can rest on a naked wrestling match? Here we are again in an insanely tough spot, pretty hopeless. Boy, how the fuck are we going to thread the needle on this one? Thread the needle? Pete, I've got it! Shh! Your whispers are like normal people shouting! Listen, do your best, try to win, and believe it or not, I think you can do it, and I'll be the one creating the distraction.
Should I ask?
Probably not. Trust me.
Oh, fuck.
Pete swings his arms and legs around, loosening them up, getting himself psyched up, beginning, against all his instincts, to trust me and my plan, in air quotes. And he smiles at Prince John. Expecting a sneer back, I'm gobsmacked. That's number five, I'm going for the record. To see him smile, too. And I totally endearing smile at that. Like this freight train of a man wouldn't hurt a fly if he had the choice. But he doesn't have a choice, at least according to the prophecy, so his smile turns into a little bit of a sad scowl. The sad scowl of a man who must crush Pete, whether he likes it or not. They tentatively circle each other near the outside boundary of the ring, and right out of the gate, Pete lunges in quick and slaps him across the face, just to get his attention.
Whoa.
Now the prince's scowl turns angry, and veins start popping in his head.
Je suis désolé, mon ami. Je ne peux pas te laisser gagner.
I have Pete's phone now and take a quick look. It says, "I am sorry, friend. I cannot let you win." Man, this is fucked up. We're supposed to think this guy is a monster, right? He's being way too cool. Now I can't call him a shitbag. Damn. Prince Jean sweeps Pete's legs like the bad guy from Karate Kid, and Pete falls on his ass. The crowd roars, and the prince grabs an ankle and a hand and literally swings Pete into the air and out of the circle. Instead of cushioning his fall, the crowd parts quickly and watches as he crashes onto the stone floor. Ouch.
Numero un!
Uh-oh, it's taking Pete a second to get up. But there it is, the Pete rage switch. This guy just turned it on. Man, oh man, Prince Jean, I'm not sure you wanted to do that. They get back into the center of the ring. The crowd's really getting into it now, chanting, Jean, 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 and throwing flowers and coins into the ring. I can't be certain, but I think some lady even throws in her underwear. And before you start thinking it's some slinky stripper thong, remember, we're in medieval times, so this underwear is worse than one of Gigi's dirtiest diapers, like the filthiest rotten scrap of rag in history. Like, why bother even wearing underwear at that point? Anyway, Jean and Pete both look up and dodge it just in time. Then Jean goes to sweep Pete's legs again to the roars of his fans, and Pete jumps over them. The crowd, stunned into silence, gapes as Pete uses the prince's momentum to throw him into some kind of reversed waistlock and hurl him into the air. Jean lands square on his back, the wind knocked out of him, and Pete literally drags him by his ankles to the border of the ring. They struggle there for a few seconds, pushing, pushing, right at the edge, until Pete picks up the toxic undies and waves it near Jean's nose. Jean backs up instinctively, right out of the ring. Fuck yes. The provost grabs the scroll, looking for some rule that invalidates Pete's maneuver, but clearly can't find one, so he just shouts,
"Illegal move! The intruder kicked him in the balls!"
Half the crowd cheers and the other half murmurs. They can't agree whether to believe their eyes or the provost, that cheating asshole. But Prince Jean settles it. He marches right over to the dude and growls,
"Je ne gagnerai pas injustement."
The provost stutters,
"Yes, my prince, I understand your desire for fairness, but the prophecy." "Juste."
"As you wish, my prince.
Proceed."
Okay, 1-1. Not bad. And the prince wants to play fair. Bonus. But when Pete rushes the prince leans down and grabs his arm and does the most amazing shoulder throw I've seen since Chief J. Strongbow versus the Iron Sheik back at Madison Square Garden. Pete doesn't even hit the ground, and this time slams into a bunch of fans, knocking about 8 of them over.
Numéro deux!
Okay, 2-1. Not great. Time to execute Chip's genius plan. I know that sounds like the ultimate oxymoron, but trust me. I skulk around the edges of the crowd. Man, everyone's got their eyes glued to the action. I could run away if I wanted. Don't worry, Julie, I'm not running away this time. I gingerly make my way back to our unicorn and take out the old woman's sewing gear. Ah, a needle and a shitload of thread. All I need. Wow, that sewing class in 8th grade might actually do some good. I might have to go back and thank Mrs. Owens. Even though she gave me like a 67, I barely passed 9th grade thanks to that angry old coot. Anyway, as I make my way slowly, slowly around and through the distracted crowd, Pete is taking a beating, poor guy, and Aunt Barb is looking on, completely distraught. But no one, not even Barb, notices me. Good. I finish up just as Prince Jean gets Pete into a chokehold. He's trying his best to wriggle out of it, but I can see Pete's lips turning blue. I jump onto the dais.
Excuse moi!
Everyone stops shouting and grappling and making bets just for a second. But a second is all I need. I slap the ass of one of the guard's unicorns, and it takes off like a rocket. And suddenly everyone, and I mean everyone, except me and Barb and the two naked wrestlers, feels a little jerk. And in that wee itty-bitty moment, realize that their clothes are stitched together with everyone else's, and all of them are tied to the saddle of a galloping unicorn, and whoosh! Gone. Everyone's clothes, except me and Barb. Julie, I can't even describe how stunned these people are and how proud I am of this moment in my life. Yes, I've saved the multiverse more than once, but sewing together a medieval crowd's garments and having them fly off in a cloud of ripped cloth, trailing from the ass of a frightened unicorn, absolutely priceless. The prince lets go of his death grip and laughs, maybe the heartiest laugh I've ever heard, at the sight of the royal provost in his frilly underwear trying to cover his naked parts, shouting,
"This wasn't in the prophecy! This wasn't in the prophecy!"
Prince Jean and Pete, in fact, are both laughing, slapping each other on the back like opponents turned lifelong friends.
But before they get too chummy, I whistle my best New York City cabbie whistle and get his attention.
Hey, dude, now!
And without even thinking, Naked Pete grabs bewildered Barb and her Mary Poppins bag and comes running over with Prince Jean suddenly realizing the joke's over and his prophecy and future bride are getting away. We all jump on the old woman's unicorn, and I'm sure its back is threatening to break, but it takes off in the direction of the door in a cloud of dust, with Prince Jean in pursuit. I'm in front, bewildered Barb is in the middle, and Pete's taking up the rear, almost literally. Barb sitting backwards, facing Pete but looking past him, towards the prince, almost wistful. Pete gives her a big hug. Aunt Barb, what the hell happened back there? Are you all right?
Oh dear, Pete, I don't know. I wish I could explain.
Please try.
Okay, have you ever met anyone and right away you knew they were the one?
Aunt Barb, he kidnapped you.
I know, but still.
You're not in one of your romance novels, Aunt Barb. This is real. Well, sort of real. Chip thinks it's a temporal anomaly.
I know, Pete, honey. I'm sorry. I know what has to be done. And I'm with you. But still, I've never felt this before. Not the romantic part, although that's a thrill. No, something else. Pete, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I feel like I'm supposed to be here.
Yes, good. You are supposed to be with us in Paris 1945 to help repair the paradox tear in the multiverse.
No, I mean supposed to be here. Paris, 1182.
I'm sorry, Aunt Barb, but as Tesla would say, hogwash. She smiles weakly.
I hope you're right, because it sure doesn't feel that way.
Don't worry, Aunt Barb, your heart's just breaking, but you'll be fine. You've only known the guy for an hour. She looks past Pete again, wistful.
So strange. It doesn't feel like an hour.
We finally get to the door. Oh, and in case you were wondering, three people riding a unicorn is even less fun than two people riding a unicorn. And we dismount. Okay, they dismount, and I fall off again. And Pete tears off a section of Barb's trampled wedding dress train, wrapping it around himself like a toga. I have to laugh. Well, will you look at us? All I'm missing is that tuxedo from last time. No time to chit-chat. Let's go. Talk about no time. Not only is the prince on our tails, like seconds behind us, but that orange tear. Jeez, it's like a foot long now and super bright orange. Yikes. As we hurry through the door and watch it close behind us, we can see the remnants of a prince, brokenhearted, lunging for us, crying out for his love, for his future, for the prophetic future of his universe, screaming,
Je serai ici attent, mon destin.
And the door closes. Barb sniffs back a tear. Aunt Barb, what did he say?
He said, I'll be here waiting, my destiny.
I take a few deep breaths. Phew, sorry about all that, Barb, but at least we're safe and sound back in Paris 1945. We turn around. This is not safe and sound back in Paris 1945. New email from Chip Collins to Julie Taylor, date February 29, 2020. Subject, RE, and you thought talking dinosaurs was weird. Hi, Julie. So just as I was getting the hang of this infinite multiple dimensions thing, it only took me like 5 years, this paradox starts throwing temporal anomalies at us, and I don't even know what's real anymore. Was medieval Paris real? A separate dimension? Or was it a ghost of one like the old version of Tesla we met in the park? Or teenage Gigi? And where are we now? When? Is this real? Why are we here? We gotta get back. Chip, Earth to Chip, wake up. We have a visitor. We're standing in the middle of a savanna in the middle of the night. There aren't any buildings or anything, but it has the same topography. No, I'm not suddenly a cartographer. This shit is just so surreal, it's sticking in my brain. Yes, we're in Paris. Again. I just know it. But earlier. Much earlier. There's a dinosaur stumbling past us. It doesn't even notice us. It's laughing to itself. I call out to him. Calvin? It turns and looks straight at us. It's definitely a Deinonychus. It mumbles something incoherent. Then it laughs again and makes its way over to us, herky-jerky, taking its time, mumbling a word this time.
Calvin?
Yeah, you look just like Calvin. Well, more or less. Are you Calvin? Its eyes are going all wonky and it's giggling. It gurgles.
You look just like Calvin?
Great. Are you just repeating what I say?
Are you just repeating what I say?
Another giggle. Then,
you just say more?
Chip, dude, forget it. This thing is high as a kite. It keeps Murmur talking.
Say more, dude.
Barb reaches into her bag and pulls out a pack of cigarettes.
I think he's trying to communicate with us. Want one, Calvin?
The dinosaur looks at it quizzically.
Want, say, more, dude, trying, communicate, with, dude.
Ah, okay. Trying to communicate. Let's try this. The verb to be. Infinitive, be. Present tense, am, is, are. Past tense, was, were. Past participle, been. Present participle, being. You getting this?
It nods. I am getting this. Say more.
Okay. First person, I am. Second person, you are. Third person, he or she is, or plural, they.
Pete holds up his hand. Aunt Barb, the high school English lesson's great, but... He hands the dinosaur his phone, and it scrolls and taps around. It's kind of hilarious because its claws are totally getting in the way and it's high, so it's alternating between laughing and getting really frustrated. Finally,
ah, that's better. Yes, I am Calvin, and yes, I am extremely high at the moment. There's a bush over there at our camp, and we're burning it, and it's at just the right, you know, the maximum psychotropic chemical balance. You have to try it.
Wait, did you just learn English in 2 minutes?
Of course.
He points up to his noggin. Extremely densely packed neurons. Points back at us.
What are you guys, humans?
Yeah, humans, looking for answers, like where we are and why we're here. Are you the Calvin? He giggles again, that high-as-a-kite giggle, and calls out past the bushes.
Hey, Calvin!
And 4 identical Deinonychi come stumbling into view, pushing each other, cracking up.
We're all Calvin. Always. Analogous to your use of the word dude, or bro.
Hey, like Nicola with the pigeons. He calls all of his pigeons Penelope. Calvin gives me this look. I swear, it's almost like pity. Like he's pitying the poor human with the itty-bitty brain.
Sure, whatever you say. Listen, you have a particular Calvin in mind?
Yeah, the one in Paris in the year 1945, Marie Curie's lab assistant.
Whoa, hold on. A lot to unpack there. Years? Oh, right, measure of time. We don't have that yet.
He taps on the phone for a few seconds.
Ah, one complete revolution of this planet around the central star. Let's see, based on your arbitrary year one, we'd be in,
And one of the other Calvins shouts,
negative 65 million, give or take.
And they all start howling with laughter, falling over each other.
Negative 65 million.
The main Calvin shakes his head.
Yeah, no way your Calvin is here. He won't be born for another 65 million years. Our species only live max, maybe 35 or fewer years. Even shorter, usually. You know, because we're nihilists. Extreme nihilists.
Extreme what?
Nihilists. Life is meaningless. All dinosaur species believe this. It's written into our DNA. So we wait, eagerly, in fact, for something to kill us, or we kill ourselves early through excess or risk. Weird, I know, but there's nothing like watching it all burn.
Shit, dude, that's dark.
That's dinosaurs.
I lean into Pete. Jeez, where is he going with this?
He's a velociraptor. I have no idea.
Then he looks past me and his eyes go wide.
Dude?
What's up? I turn around and look up and, yeah, there it is. A meteor. No, wait, not a meteor. The meteor. We run for the door and haul ass back through, still hearing a bunch of intoxicated dinosaurs laughing their asses off at their own extinction event. One of them screaming, "Bring it on!" Fucking nihilist dinosaurs.
New email from Chip Collins to Julie Taylor. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, RE, and you thought talking dinosaurs was weird.
Okay, somebody give me some good news.
Barb takes out her lighter, hands shaking.
Well, we can't go any further back in time at least, right?
As her lighter ignites, we all notice. Its little flame is reflecting on us, but nothing else. It's total blackness otherwise.
I don't know about that. Are we in space? I feel around me. We're not floating, and we can breathe. It's not space. I think it's nothing.
The void?
The word sends a shudder up my back. Barb's whimpering now. It's annoying. Her hands reach out and take ours.
I'm so sorry, boys. I didn't mean to ruin everything. It was just all so exciting. But now...
You never want another exciting thing like this in your whole entire life. She nods and starts blubbering. Trust us, Barb. Me and Pete know how it feels. Boring is better. That's why Guy's Night In is our favorite thing now. It's boring and beautiful. Pete takes her in his arms. We'll figure this out, Aunt Barb. And if we can't, usually some kind of Deus Ex Machina comes along. She sniffles.
Deus Ex what?
And at that exact moment, on cue, as if Pete called it into existence, a dot of light appears out yonder, some infinite distance away, but also right in front of us. Weird. Hey, Pete, you don't think that could be... And instantly the light explodes, impossibly bright, in all directions at once, engulfing us, becoming us. And in that teeniest, tiniest, micromilla fraction of a moment, we see and understand. We are witnessing the Big Bang. Everything from nothing. Deus ex machina, God from the machine. We couldn't possibly go back in time further now, because there is no time before this. This is the birth of time. Instantly, the possibilities begin to happen, and doors like mirrors appear and multiply and reflect every instance, and it all becomes mirrors. And we are the mirrors, the doors, looking into ourselves. Our minds are expanding, multiplying, too. In short, it's quite the trip. Barb looks at me and stops crying and smiles beatifically. Well, this isn't boring. And she reaches out and embraces us both, and together we wonder if it's all been fixed, if everyone's safe, and we're in heaven. But in the next instant, the light becomes too much and too hot, and we're destroyed, completely obliterated, dissolving into nothing. New email from Chip Collins to Julie Taylor. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, RE, and you thought talking dinosaurs was weird. I open my eyes. Holy shit, I need an Advil. My head is pounding like I just got hit with all the force of the Big Bang, which I did, and I squint against the light and see Barb and Pete squinting too, both of them also mumbling something about pain medication. Pete croaks, "Dude, what the actual fuck?" We're flat on our backs, right there in the middle of the sidewalk in front of 2020 Rue Danton, Paris. I assume it's 1945, but immediately scold myself. Come on, Chip, you know what happens when you assume. A coin pelts me in the face, then another. We sit up, realizing we're surrounded by people now, who must think we're some kind of performance art troupe. Or they're all still drunk and partying for Victory Day and throwing spare change at every hobo they meet. That seems more likely. Show's over, folks. I get up, which is a bad idea, and hurl. And the crowd suddenly agrees with me 100%, show's over, and they flee. I pull Barb and Pete up, and we're all in pretty bad shape. Apparently traveling all the way back, and I mean all the way back, is not so good for your stomach, or your head, or anything, really. Barb vomits right down the front of her medieval wedding dress and starts crying again. What a mess. Pete tries to wipe some of it off with his filthy wedding dress train/toga. It's no use. So I pick up the coins. I know, I just saw the beginning of the multiverse, and now I'm worried about coins. Where's your perspective, Chip? And step up to the building, looking over the door. It's red. Okay, regular door now. Good. Let's go.
I have a question.
It's Barb, all mascara-cheeked, mud-caked, and now partially covered in her own breakfast. God, we all need a bath. What is it, Barb? If you didn't get the hint from our little escapade there, we're kind of running out of time.
See, that's just it.
No riddles, please. My brain can't take it. Just tell us.
If these temporal anomalies are like warnings, what the hell... Oh, excuse me. What in goodness name was that wedding thing about?
What do I look like, Mr. Temporal Anomaly Interpreter? It just happened. It means nothing. She lights up another Pall Mall. Jeez, Barb, go light with the death sticks. The cigarette glows and surrounds her face with smoke.
Did you know... That Pall Mall was the name of a game they used to play in Paris?
Let me guess, back in 1200. She nods.
Just has me thinking. So strange. I've been smoking this brand since I was in sixth grade.
A gasp from Pete.
Aunt Barb, you rapped me on the ear when you caught me smoking, and I was in eighth grade.
She pats his shoulder.
Oh, Pete, my dear Pete. It's just got me thinking, that's all. Doesn't it make you think? But you fellas are probably right. I should probably be more like you and stop using my brain so much.
Excuse me?
Oh dear, not what I meant. I just meant...
Whatever, let's go. We've got to get upstairs now.
and every single window on the sixth floor of Marie Curie's building explodes out in a fireball.